A firm grip does not enhance pressure, as so many teachers tell you it does. It merely provides an essential stabilization to the embouchure itself. You cannot allow your mouthpiece to creep at the slightest provocation. That left-hand grip, in my opinion, in most cases, cannot be too firm. I tell this one to everyone who comes in. Check your left-hand grip. The beginning of the engagement, the end of the engagement, and all through your practice. If you do nothing but hear that today and heed that advice, you will improve from that alone even before you see me. I repeat, this is the end of tape two, and so you think you have problems. This is Dr. Donald S. Reinhardt. This is Dr. Donald S. Reinhardt. I will continue with my discussion on this tape number three, so you think you have problems. Case number 18, the jumping mouthpiece position during middle register staccato passages. This fault used to be quite common. However, in recent years, since ranges have become more extended, fewer and fewer people are permitting their tongues to come between their teeth and lips. The old adage of spitting seeds, shreds, or confetti from the tip of the tongue to produce a so-called crisp attack was wrong, is wrong, and always will be wrong. There are five forms of tongue penetration. You can read about that in my Encyclopedia of the Pivot System. I'm just discussing odd cases here. But I did want to bring this one to your attention, this particular one. Jumping mouthpieces are nothing new. In tongue penetration, the old vice of days gone by, and unfortunately, some of them still hold on to it for dear life, as though we didn't have enough trouble without adding that point of dissatisfaction. They must release the pressure of the mouthpiece against the lips momentarily to permit the tip of the tongue to penetrate between the teeth and lips. Think that over yourself just while you sit there. Then the pressure is snapped back against the lips when the attack is made. Because remember, no attack is made until the backstroke is accounted for. The backstroke of your tongue is the release of the air column. So when this tongue went back, permitting the spasmodic thrust of the air column to move forward, the mouthpiece was thrust against the lips. So then in a staccato passage, this fellow will hit himself in the mouth with the mouthpiece with as many notes as he was playing. Just figure it out yourself. He had to release the mouthpiece pressure to get the tip of the tongue between the teeth and lips. Then it had to fly back into position as he was making his attack. And this, in repeated fashion, looked like the shuttle in a silk factory. Only he's dealing with flesh here, muscles, and nerves. And he's causing irreparable damage, not only to his range, not only to his endurance, but he's permitting his tongue notes to sound entirely different than his slurred notes. Think that point over, if nothing else convinces you. A tongue must never be permitted to penetrate between the teeth and lips. In any register, at any time, for any reason whatsoever. And I do mean for the low F sharp on a trumpet, the low E on a tenor trombone, or what have you. I've even convinced tuba players of this, believe it or not. I admit there's some that permit it. for certain Marcato passages, as they put it. However, they must admit that if they didn't do it in the first place, they'd be much safer. Tongue penetration and smiling to ascend are the two most detrimental vices that a brass player can possibly inherit from his teacher. A teacher who was teaching that dates back to Patty Gilmore's band in 1893. That is wrong. If you're one of those that have been led into channels like that, that you spit seeds or threads from the tip of your lip or your tongue to make a so-called attack, you are tongue incorrectly. Now, I'm not here to teach on this tape. I'm only here to point out oddities. Well, this fellow's mouthpiece was hopping so badly, he would have to see this to believe it. If you gave him a page of staccato, like you have in the Brandt trumpet book, he would do about four lines and be so tired he couldn't go on from hitting himself consistently in the mouth with the mouthpiece every time he played a note. Now, not only that fact, but the fact that the tongue notes are a different timbre entirely than the slurred notes. And the fact that playing that way, he will never acquire range. Not in a million years. I mean, a decent G above high C, and maybe a decent C above high C. Ranges like that were never acquired by the spitting of seeds from the tip of the tongue, boys. If the tongue has to go back in the mouth to make an attack, and it's your backstroke that makes the attack, and if you don't believe it while you say there, just say two to yourself. Your tongue went back, didn't it? Now, what does Mr. Ivins mean when he says striking the note? Striking leads you believe you're going forward with the tongue. You're going forward with the tongue only to go backwards. Isn't that correct? Think it over. Think it over. Apply logic, not nonsensical tradition. Well, anyway, this tongue was corrected. He no longer tongued between his teeth. He had trouble at first. But I got him straightened out with a legato tongue. And I showed him that he could use his tongue in a legato tongue and could tongue. Why couldn't he use his tongue that way later on to produce other detached notes? And we went from there to triple and double tonguing. And in triple and double tonguing, you don't tongue between your teeth anyway. If you do, you're just from outer space because no one else does. So I had him do all the things he could do with his tongue that he didn't penetrate. And he finally lost his habit. I believe that case took about 4 months. Case number 19. The trombonist who was in the process of acquiring the graceful cello bow right arm. His teacher said he looked too Teutonic. That his arm was too abrupt in going from one position to another. That it reminded his teacher too much of the German goose step. That it was too Teutonic, so to speak. So he tried to acquire a graceful right arm. You've never seen anybody's playing deteriorate so fast in your life as you did that fellow's. Now, I want to give you a little hint here of some good, sensible trombone practice. Chromatics, as given on page 83 in the Arbenz book, or any other book, just so we're involved with two octave chromatics, from the low B flat to the high B flat. By the high B flat, I mean the one four ledger lines above the bass clef staff, two octaves, so to speak, up and down. doing that as an exercise every day. Stopping your slide in every position. And I mean stopping it. The same as a valve stops when you hit the bottom or hit into the felt. That's the way I want you to stop. Every note is special, stop. Do that every day for 10 to 15 minutes. And then the rest of your day, forget it. And your positions will stay nicely in line, and you can be graceful besides. But just preaching graceful right arm to a trombonist who has never acquired accuracy in the first place is completely 100% stupid. First acquire the accuracy, then worry about the grace. It's like the clarinet section in the band getting so involved playing grace notes, they don't play the principal notes right half the time. Now the grace notes in that case were just the icing on the cake, but we had to get the cake right first. And here the principle of the thing is to get the thing clean first, then worry about how graceful we look. Anyway, who looks good playing a brass instrument? Do you? I know you don't. Case number 20. A trumpet player who could play C above C, however, he could not tongue above the high C, two ledger lines above the treble staff. This was a very odd case in my New York studios. Just as the title suggested, he had a beautiful range. However, notes above C, he was always puzzled, why couldn't he tongue them? Well, this particular fellow had a little Andy Gump jaw. In other words, his jaw receded quite a bit. He played the lead trumpet in a well-known name band at the time. But he couldn't tongue above high C. He wanted to know why. Believe it or not, after extensive tests, I found out, by extensive tests, I mean in the first lesson, incidentally, I found out that he's using his tongue into his long lower lip for what his teeth should be doing with his jaw. In other words, he's pushing his tongue into his lower lip to get past the high C. Did you ever hear that one? That's how to make an Andy Gump jaw long enough, I suppose. But anyway, to correct it, as soon as he knew what it was, it's amazing why veteran players don't find these things out about themselves, isn't it? I guess some of you listening are smiling now. But that's one case right there. He had to be shown what was wrong, and he then was passed the ball, and he took it over very gracefully. He did get his range back, and he could tongue once he understood the situation. I don't believe that case took over 2 months. I had a girl one time who played trombone, and she used to play with her tongue and her lower lip at all times. And she'd make her an attack with a so-called grunt or a spasmodic thrust of the breath. I think I mentioned this similar thing about the breath earlier in this discussion. But she had a beautiful sound. Now, let me show you. In the inside of a plastic mouthpiece, her tongue was through or over the lower lip, and the tongue was doing the vibrating. Write that one down in your books. On the outside, it looked like she had her tongue in her lower lip. But on the inside, you could see the tongue was doing the vibrating. Then as I looked more carefully, on the left side of their mouth, the tongue was peeping out on one side. And the girl, this way, got a beautiful sound. Now, those are two cases there that I think are very, very odd. And I think they should come in this hall of fame, so to speak, in So You Think You Have Problems. I believe this is case number 22. Anyway, we'll call it the trombonist with the rattling G and F sharp. Since this is one of my own problems, I can discuss it very freely. I was working in a local theater one time, and it was back in the days when we had 80 men in the pit. 80, I said, not 8. And we would do all the standard overtures and all that sort of thing. At the time, I was playing bass trombone in the pit and first trombone on the stage, in a stage band, meaning that I would change horns and mouthpieces every single solitary show. Now, this went on very well for the better part of 7 months or so. And I started developing a rattle or some undesirable, unwanted overtones on a middle G and F sharp. That is in the bass staff I'm speaking of. At times when I got tired, it would be so discouraging that I'd try to hide the two notes. And I got that I worked up a terrible fear of the two notes, that I'd see them coming in the corner of my eye and apart, and then I'd hope that no one would notice them. Well, this was reaching such a point, I didn't know what to do. No one had said anything yet on the job, but I was sure they were going to. And I guess when we get that way, we magnify our own problems considerably. But just that night, we were rewarded. We were told the union was going out on a strike, and that we did not need to come back to work until the union would call us back at further notice. And we struck for higher wages, shorter hours, and the usual bitch, you know. Now, we didn't come back for a long time. I don't know how many weeks it was. I can't remember. But I know this, that when I came back, I was told I was to play first trombone in the pit and first trombone on the stage. And, of course, that made me feel good because I did not have this changeover problem every show. And by the time I came back anyway, the rattle had left the G and F sharp. However, in the meantime, I was over in New York waving money at every teacher I could find to try to find out what the trouble was. All they could tell me was, don't worry, it'll go away. Well, I had some kind of an idea like that in the first place. But when your job depends on it, well, you can't wait around for luck, so to speak. You had to produce. So I was very concerned. But arrest is the only thing, really, that will cure an involuntary lip vibration. It reminds me like a pair of old suspenders in the old days, like the old farmers used to wear, and the rubber would become pulled. And that's the way the vibrating surface of the lip becomes, stretched, so to speak. I like this tape recorder. If I stretched a tape at one place, it would change momentarily. That's exactly what would happen in the lip. That on those two particular notes, they would set up an independent false vibration in another part of the lip, of course, in the vibrating area. And you could have no control over this at all. It's completely involuntary. I used to find out that if I pulled my lower lip in over my teeth a little bit more, it would stop it or slow it down a little bit. And, well, all these little remedies that we had at the time, and we were groping around, believe me. But I found out that in most cases, that is a loose lower lip. It is the fact that the membrane is not firm enough and that the mouth corners are not firm and gripping and that the chin is not flat, so to speak. So I did get over that. Luckily, I've never had it to this day. But boy, I had a year and a half of that, and it was a year and a half of worries. It came on me over a period of about 7 months. I could feel it creeping in. And then I took some time off with the union strike. I should say time off by request. And after we came back, I no longer had the problem. I repeat, the title of this tape is So You Think You Have Problems. Last but not least on this tape, someone asked me to discuss this. They always hear me talking about texture of tone. Do I mean timbre when I say texture? The answer is I do not. The definition of timbre is tone quality. My definition of texture is the texture is the atom of timbre. Let us say that you knew a person very well. You knew him for many years. And your back was turned, and he came into the room. Almost no matter how he would disguise his voice, you would know it was the person who was trying to fool you. And you'd know that because that is like the man's fingerprint. The texture of a man's sound never changes. Never. He can get a bigger bore horn. He can get another mouthpiece. He can take more lessons. He can spend more money. He will never change the texture of the sound. A coarse tone remains a coarse tone. However, he might learn how to disguise it. Some teacher might say he's going to give him a better tone. Don't believe that. It's a lie. All the teacher gave him was better control of the texture of his tone so that he could hide his weaknesses. The texture of a sound never changes till the day you die on the instrument. You can cover it up with a vibrato. You can do this to it. You can get greater breath control. But that texture is that texture. The same as the texture of your skin will never change. Your fingerprints will never change. That texture of your tone will never change. All you can do is max factor the tone a little bit to hide your weaknesses. Or if your profile isn't right on one side of your face, then stand so that people see the other side. Or like the ostrich hiding his head in the sand so you can't see him. Well, I considered some of these cases rather unusual. I do hope that you got some...
Another case which I believe is worth mentioning...
And they recorded only on one side.
It was with Bill Harris, the nationally known jazz trombone player.
On a Swiss,
I think he won 11 or 12 downbeat polls and
which is one of the finest recorders,
six or seven metronome polls.
And I used to tell
in fact, I think for a long time he was the highest paid jazz man in America.
On a series A Ampex.
I'm bringing up Bill's name because Bill is a personal friend of mine. I started Bill on trombone.
Right now.
I believe when he was 27 years old.
Seven
and a half. So those of you who think you're too old, so to speak.
Sometimes I use them on a full track.
And of course, he came ahead like a house on fire.
You cannot use a two-sided.
But on a full Bill finally, in his travels with Woody Herman and so forth, he.
If you have any questions?
He wound up having a home in Coral Gables, Florida.
And ask me.
Which is just on the outskirts of Miami.
I'll be delighted.
And he and Flip Phillips, the tenor saxophone player. And bought their own nightclub. And the two of them had a combo. Well, Bill used to go out on the beach every morning early. And he became fast friends with a young Miami University dental student. Now, from here on, it's the way Bill relates it. And they used to meet this dental student every morning on the beach. And they talk and so forth. And Bill gets on the subject of his own teeth. And Bill said he'd reached a stage where there were drafts here and drafts there from teeth that had been pulled. And he was wondering what to do next. And dentists have given him several warnings and all this and that. So he worked up a lot of confidence in this young dental student. And he permitted him to make a mold or a jacket, so to speak, of the teeth that still remained, and to use his imagination for the teeth that had been removed. From that, he made an artificial set of plates, upper and lower. Now, according to old-time dentistry, they used to leave you and sit around 6 or 7 months until the gums and mouth had healed, so to speak. And then they get around to making you a set of teeth, which would never fit anyway, and there was a lot of trouble, and people couldn't wear them and whatnot. because the shrinkage in that time and the healing process was too great. So nowadays, in modern dentistry, I understand, I don't claim to be a dentist, by the way, but I understand that the teeth are removed in one operation, and right in with the blood and the stitches and so forth and the agony and whatnot, in go the false teeth. And the false teeth are to remain for 24 hours without removing them. Now, that's the big pitch. If you can keep them in your mouth 24 hours without removing them, you're a real hero. Well, Bill was going through this, and for a person who's dependent on his teeth, for his livelihood depends on his teeth, as it did with Bill, you can imagine the mental anguish as well as the physical turmoil that he went through that first night. So the next morning, he saw the trombone on the piano, and even with the agony, since the Novocaine had worn off, he picked up the trombone and he made some kind of a noise. He said it resembled a middle B flat. And he was very happy because he knew now he could still play to some extent. He went through another day of torture, of the gums healing to the new teeth, so to speak. And he picked up the trombone again, and he found out he could play a little bit. Not much, not for long. Well, the third day, he, as he puts it, very stupidly, had made a record date. He was to record in Miami. He tries to get the proper person on the phone to cancel the date. And the line was busy, and the line was busy a long time. Bill, in the meantime, picks up his trombone and finds out he can play. And the story goes that Bill made the record date, and Bill made one of the best records he ever made. This interested so many other brass players. I could name them, but I do not know them as well as Bill, so I would not mention their names on tape. But they, too, went to this young dental student and had their teeth removed. And in not one case that I've heard of has this been a failure. So I just thought it would give some of you a good feeling to hear these good tidings from someone as big as Bill Harris. Bill now lives in Las Vegas with his wife and kids, and I think he has several apartment houses, and he plays in the Tropicana now and then and so forth, but he's not as active as he used to be. But Bill's now in his late 40s, and I guess he wants to settle down, so to speak. But I think it's a good story to remember that, for these old squares say you cannot play on false teeth and all that sort of thing. I believe it's up to your dentist, not up to your brass teacher. I think if you have a decent dentist, you have the problem solved. If you got some old-fashioned dentist, you're in trouble, fella. You're really in trouble. So I just wanted to relate that story, and I'm sure Bill wouldn't get angry if he knew I mentioned his name on it. I hope from listening to all this that you've gained in knowledge, and that you've also gained a new spirit of confidence. And that's exactly what I mean, a spirit of confidence that's so necessary in brass playing, that you know you can go on and forge ahead, and that difficulties are going to come up. They are. All kinds of brass stymies will present themselves, but that you're just man enough to live them down. You do not run away. Running away from anything only increases the defeat mechanism. So all I tell you, when you get a problem, let's face it together. That's why you're here. That's why I'm here. I hope you've gotten something out of this. This is Dr. Donald S. Reinhart, and thank you for listening.